Hey you, welcome to another episode of Impressions Podcast, your backstage pass to the ever-evolving world of digital marketing in Africa. In case you missed it, our last episode covered the state of digital marketing in Africa with our guests PC Timmy and Michael Okeje. You could find this on your favorite listening platform like Spotify, Apple, Deezer, and so many others. Today, we'll be exploring the hottest marketing titles of the moment, from product marketing to growth marketing, growth hacking to product growth management. And of course, we've got two of the industry's best growth leaders to guide us. Olabinjo Adeniran, current product marketing manager at Horizon Blockchain Games, with over 10 years of experience leading growth and marketing teams at companies like Future Africa, Binance, and Bitcoins, alongside Sonia Madi, current head of growth at Synth, with experience leading growth teams across companies like Nestcoin, Eden Life, and much more. This is one of my favorite topics, so grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and enjoy this one from me to you. I'm Dara, your host for this season. Welcome to Marcus in Africa Cafe. It's a cafe, it's just chilled. Typically, what would you order when you go to a cafe? Are you taking tea, coffee, smoothies? What are you getting, Benjo?
Coffee, an Americano, precisely.
You're the first person that has been on the call that has said coffee.
You said it's a cafe now.
Coffee, coffee. That's
like everybody has gone with tea, water, smoothie, hot chocolate. Nobody has said coffee. I'm like, so, okay, one person said coffee this morning. I'm like, so who are the people that usually have coffee? Sonia, how about you?
So I have this thing I like where they mix like the hot chocolate and I'm like a shot of espresso. So yeah, that's what I get.
Ah, that's interesting. Let me, I just go plain on with the hot chocolate because I'm just here for the sweet things, nothing more. That's fine. So that's just to set the sense. That's just this child conversation. I'm not going to ask Benjo this first question because I kind of get a sense of what his answer would be, but I'm not going to say it till I ask Sonia. Sonia, so if you could go back in time, say 30 seconds, time machine, and you could give yourself an advice about growth marketing career or product marketing career, what would you tell yourself?
I'd say a big problem I had when I started was around like learning and engaging and getting content. And I think because I did not enjoy reading a lot of books, self-help books, right? That was a blocker for me with getting knowledge that way. I'd say explore other forms of content, right? Listen to audiobooks, listen to podcasts, right? Especially those two. I tell myself to explore them more and not just get stuck on, you know, books, written books and how boring it gets. Explore other forms of content. It's actually more interesting that way to get knowledge. So I think that's one of the key things I tell myself. The other thing I tell myself is be more open to doing the hard things.
Yeah, oh, that's 30 seconds. Okay, that's fine. Benjo, I feel like your response would have been wrong because that's like a recurring theme in your tweets and all of that. I'd be like, yeah, younger Benjo, just run from anything, growth or something.
So I think.
Okay, Benjo is always run.
I have way better ideas. I think that for me, I think one thing I wasn't doing 4 years, 34 years and 30, what did you say ago? 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Ago, I think I wasn't talking a lot about the work that I was doing at the time. And so maybe I would have shared my work more. I think that had definitely been very beneficial. But, you know, I was just like deep down building, which is how I typically am. So that's one advice I think I'll give to myself 4 years and 30 seconds ago.
That's lovely. I mean, you work long enough to know that. I mean, there's a part where you actually have to do the extra part of showing up and actually representing the work you do. So you can't just leave it to other people to kind of show up for you. So that's great. Thank you for sharing. I thought you would say run. Okay, that's why I didn't ask you. But it's fine. So I do have a question about different titles. We see growth product manager, we see product marketing manager, we see growth hackers. Benjo, what do you think are the similarities or the difference in this role? For people without context and also for employers with the way to think around these different titles.
Yeah. Why is Sonia smiling? I think something that's happened with marketing roles in tech specifically is because of the internet, all of the jobs just have like different titles, but fundamentally, sometimes they're the same thing. But I will say that in more mature industries. Obviously, tech ecosystem in Nigeria is still growing. In more mature industries, a product marketing manager is somebody who is a marketing generalist. It's called product because, you know, it's tech product, but it's also called product because it has very heavy influence from Apple, and it's Apple who typically had these job titles before everyone else started to adopt it. So it's often a generalist who can do everything from content to ads to SEO to email to landing pages, whatever it is that needs to be done. A product marketing manager can often handle these things. So it tends to be a role for people who want to really go broad. A growth marketer or a growth hacker, sometimes both roles are used, you know, interchangeably, right? Because you're thinking about somebody who really understands like the business itself, the space that the business is in, the industry, some operational knowledge as well, and can really just do two things. One is fix things or guide others to fix things that a product might have issues with. So operational things, user experience things, whatever it is, but the person just has that deep knowledge and can fix things. And the second is be able to build things that then help the, you know, the product to grow. So some of those things can be marketing things, but they might also not be marketing things, right? And so those, you know, the growth marketer, the growth hacker title is often used interchangeably. And then the growth product manager is a really recent job title that has come up. And I think, again, it's also because of that, like, delineation of responsibilities. It's often a product marketer who is in charge of the growth aspect of a product, right? The actual things that can bring the company more users, the things that can bring the company, maybe they don't want to grow users, but they want to increase, you know, engagement with their platform, or they want to increase revenue. That person often has a very deep thesis and understanding of what needs to be done, what needs to be built, and is a product manager in charge of that things. Now, they might be working with a growth hacker or growth marketer and a product marketing manager, right? But they're often, you know, leading out that side of the business, and they're often working with the software side, right? They're working with dev, they're working with design, they're working with researchers. They're essentially thinking about, like, you know, there are 10 companies in this space, right? And we're one of 10 companies. What are some things we can do that will really push the needle for us before everyone else catches up with it? So they tend to be people who have, like, specific experience. For example, maybe marketplaces, or logistics, or e-commerce, and then they know how these businesses should grow, and they have, like, creative ways of building new moats and new value props for those businesses. So that's, like, how I see things from my own experience, you know, having multiple jobs at multiple places with these different titles as well. And I think that from the public, sometimes it can be seen as the same thing, especially for first-time founders who might not have interacted with any of these type of people before, if they're maybe engineers or they're devs or they're designers and they haven't really worked with some of the people in these titles. They can be seen as, you know, all of these titles are the same, but they tend to not be. Another thing I will add is job titles can be very company specific. So there's, you know, there was news earlier in the year about Airbnb and how they had kind of shifted their product management role to do more marketing work. And that's, again, that's how we used to be at Apple in the early days. But, like, industry has, you know, much more specific skill set needs sometimes. Also, Airbnb happens to be a very strong brand. And now that everybody knows it, maybe they actually need to do less marketing and more product work. But many early stage startups might not need that type of, you know, cross-functional role where a product manager is also the product marketing manager. So it really depends, right? The company, the stage, the industry they're at. What needs to be done? Sometimes we'll determine what the job description is. And I can give one simple example is that, like, if we're a company that has figured out that, like, ads, performance ads on Meta, on Google, on TikTok, or whatever other channel is what drives the needle for us in terms of customer acquisition and revenue, we will tend to want to hire a growth marketer who's really good at ads, right? Who's good at building landing pages, who's good at doing A/B testing, who's good at, like, improving conversion, right? And we might have other people, but, like, that would be the primary job description of that person. They might not necessarily have to work within products to drive new product ideas or fix onboarding. That might be somebody else's responsibility. That's, like, my own experience, and I'm happy to be wrong, but that's been my experience.
Sonia, what do you think? What's been your experience so far?
Okay, so I agree with Dinjo on like a lot of things. I think what I would add is that the growth marketing role typically is like a generalist role. And it usually comes in at the early stage of a business. So in order to understand how a growth marketer works, you need to like just understand what growth is. So growth isn't marketing, right? It's not restricted to marketing. It's like the entire flow. It's like the entire, funnel, right? All the way from awareness, acquisition, all the way to retention, loyalty, right? The work of a growth person is to worry about everything happening at each of those stages, right? And tweaking things or making things happen so that at each conversion stage or at each conversion level, you're widening, the space through which people come in and getting insights and putting those insights back into the business, right? So that's essentially what a growth marketer does. Now, I see the growth hacking role as one that is, I wouldn't call it an invention, right? But it was born out of necessity when startups became like a thing, like fast growth startups, where you just need this quick, fast and easy, fast food type strategies, right, or tactics that would improve your performance. You just need something shiny and quick, like a silver bullet, right? You need someone who would put those kind of things in place. That's where the growth hacker comes in. That's what makes you even think of wanting a growth hacker. Now for the product growth manager or the growth product manager, so this typically is someone who is heavy on the analytics side of things, right? They are very, very technical. They work with like the software side of things a lot more. So I'm making this distinction because they're usually confused with the product marketer, right? The product growth manager is like a product manager that is still heavily on the growth side of things, right? Now the product marketer like intersects with the revenue side of things, right? Sales, the customer success, the marketing side of things. The job of the product marketing person is to understand the value proposition of a business and translate that into like marketing content or sales content, sales enablement, basically ensuring that the story of a business is told through all its channels, right? And that story is being told uniformly through all its channels. So like Bin just said, these roles differ from business to business according to what a business needs. But there are certain things that stand out, right? Or there are certain things that just make each of the roles unique. So yeah, that's what I think.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that clarification needs to be made for people, because people just, it's like you do content marketing, but you say product marketing. It seems like it's a very thin line, especially in product marketing and the responsibilities. So let's go into Sonia. So I was looking through your trajectory career-wise. You did start out in the writing, editor, and you eventually got into working as a growth person in tech, product marketing, and I see you currently do growth. So how did you move from writing currently to growth?
I worked at a startup. That's it. So what it means is that in like more established companies, you can just be fine being a writer. You can be fine having a job that's like, oh, I write the blogs, I write the emails, I write, captions for social media, I write white papers, all of that. That's all I do. But if you work at a startup, especially in a market like Nigeria, right, you're going to wear a lot of hats. Right. And pretty quickly from wearing a lot of hats, I discovered that, okay, content is just one part of a very big machine. Right. I need to understand how content plays into the rest of this machine and understand how exactly I can improve this machine to make sure that like the other things that tie into, growth, revenue are working fine. So these other things include like CRM, right? Yes, you write emails, but like how do your emails translate into, your customers getting value from the business in the sense that you're onboarding them properly, you're nurturing them through the funnel, you're making sure that at each stage they're getting what they need to get from education to like promotional materials and all of that. So you start out as a content person, but very quickly if you work at a startup, you will not stay a content person. So that's that's how that happened.
That's interesting. She said, I work at the startup. That's like, okay, I get it. Bring your back to you. I see you've always done product marketing. You had always worked in tech from the beginning of your career, it seemed. Has there been at any point where you've chosen that, or maybe I considered leaving growth or product marketing? If so, why? If not, why not?
That's it. I was hoping you asked me the same question as Sonia, but this is even worse. So has there been any point when I said I wasn't going to do, I didn't want to do this anymore? I think yes. 2022 and maybe even sometime last year. And I think the reason is that I began to see that like marketing as a discipline, everyone likes like when the Stanley Cups go viral and whatever happened to North Face, and people like all these things, but they don't actually care. Like many companies simply don't care for marketing as a discipline or as the part of the business that actually brings value. And so they often pay lip service to it. And what that means is that you often find that you're working for people who are, and to use a very strong word, they're just not serious about the job. And I like to do good work, and I like to do work that's quality. And so I did find that for a bit it was affecting the quality of my work. And I really did think deeply about not like wanting to do this thing anymore. Also, you find that there's said but also unsaid value from what happens when you build a really strong brand and what the effects a strong brand can have on a business, even in a negative or a downturn in the economy. And I think because many people fail to build strong brands, they don't care for a strong brand. They don't have the taste that you need to put into to be able to curate and create that brand value. You find that, you know, down the line, somebody else just does it and then just takes over their market share, right? And this happens over and over and over again. I've seen this happen so many times in multiple different sectors. So I think, yeah, 2022 and last year, I did think really deeply about whether I wanted to do this thing anymore or just go to FMCG or go and join an agency somewhere. So for me, that was it. And I did also think that technology industry, in my experience, can sometimes be an industry that accepts anybody. And so we have lots of unqualified people who shouldn't be running companies. And so I really had to do a deep dive. I'm like, do I want to be this industry? Because it seems like there's 10 people who really care about what they want to do. And there's 99 people who don't care at all. Do you get what I'm saying? So that for me was just like a self-reflective exercise. But I have ended up back in the industry because I do like technology really well. I do like computers. So I think I'm going to still be here for a bit, maybe like another 5 years, and then we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see where I go.
I know you did have a background in IT and then switched to working in marketing and growth. So what has that been like the career part, the journey?
Yeah, so I basically started working in marketing because I wanted to do an internship in my first year of uni, and like I had to decide to do two things, right? One was stay at home and learn like software development, which is what people do from when you're coming from school and spend a bunch of time building apps and whatever. And the option was there was a social media internship that had opened up and I could just apply. And I knew that I was like probably going to get it, right? And I did the two for that summer. And I kept doing that up to when I graduated, right? Taking programming courses, developing apps, developing websites, building a website for myself, driving traffic. And in my final year, I really had to decide what I wanted to do. Because like when you have a job, you can't do the two things. It's one or the other. Jigga, there's not a lot of marketing people who code. Jigga, what I'm saying. And so I decided to do marketing because there was this very large, overwhelming overhead in my brain every time I was trying to solve a programming problem, and I didn't like it. It lingered on for too long for me. Marketing, I could put it aside and, you know, have fun on a Sunday night. For programming, I couldn't do it. I found it really difficult to do. And so I said, I don't want to live like this for the rest of my life. And so that was a decision for me. But then I did find that in the marketing work I was doing, most of it was acquisition, right? So I was bringing customers for people, and I was bringing traffic and bringing visits, but they really struggled to keep those customers. They struggled to retain them. They struggled to communicate clearly to them. And that's really how I discovered like what growth was, which is that like, yes, I want to bring customers, but like the product has like 200 problems that need to be solved so that the customers can stay and, you know, be successful in using this software tool that we have built for them. So I had to do a lot more reading and research on it and found out that this is what was called, you know, growth. And then because I had an IT background and could, you know, code, it meant that I could technically pick out problems from a product and communicate those problems to a product team, whether it was a design team or a product manager or, you know, developers. I could actually be like, yeah, this thing is not working and this is why. Like, I know why it's broken, right? And they could solve that problem. And so for me, that became and still is my biggest advantage, which is that I am technically capable and can do technical things and can also communicate those technical things. In an industry where many people often come from like outside and don't have that technical capacity, I think for me, it's been my like biggest advantage. So yeah, that's just what my story has been.
That's super interesting. Thank you for sharing. Sonia, I'm going to come back to you and we're going to now go into a deep dive into growth frameworks and all of that. Do you have a growth framework, a philosophy that guides your thinking when leading growth at the company?
Okay, so I mean, there are different frameworks for different things, right? I think at the ideation stage of like an initiative or a plan, one of my favorite frameworks to use is like working backwards, the working backwards framework, which is something that I think was kind of popularized in Amazon, right? And they used a thing called like PRFAQ framework. And it's essentially that when you come up with an idea or like a concept, right, you write like a press release for it, right? Now, this press release is like you're going to the end of it. You've launched this product. It's live. This is the press release that you're creating for it, right? So now this press release has all the details about the product or the initiative or whatever it is you're doing. It has all the information that, you know, you haven't even finished ideating yet. So while writing, you're literally thinking through the entire thing. And as you're thinking through it, you're coming up with questions that you need to answer in your ideation process, right? Now those questions go into your FAQs, right? So once you're done with your press release, you have a very good idea. You can fully see exactly what this plan is supposed to look like, or what this product or what this feature is supposed to look like. And then based on the FAQs or the questions you've come up with, you know where the gaps exist, right? You know what the potential objections are. Now you can share this with, you know, a colleague or somebody who is also like a decision maker, and then they'd read through it and tell you what questions they have as well. And in doing that, you're able to like, again, fully just ideate and understand the boundaries of what you're planning and come up with all like all the questions that your potential or your target audience would have, right? Or all the questions that your team internally would have. So that's one framework that I like. Another framework that I like is like the bullseye framework. Now, this is going to be helpful with choosing like a channel, right? A marketing channel that you want to work with. There are like, I think, 9 or so major channels. Now, we're not talking about tactics in using these channels. We mean like channels you can reach out to your customers with, like paid ads, organic, social, all of that, right? Now, you have a list of all of these channels, right? And then you start testing using like very little investments in each of these channels, not investing a lot, just testing little by little. And then based on the results, you do like another circle, testing another 3. And then it's kind of like you're pitching different channels against each other using as like the smallest possible investment before you can arrive at the first channels that would work for the product, right? So it's these two frameworks are my faves. There are a bunch of them, but like these are the two that I typically fall back on if I have these specific problems. Yeah.
Super interesting. You've already covered one other question I was going to go back to, and it was about like how to find and identify high performing channels, but you've already covered that. So
I mean, we can talk about it again later, but yeah.
No, it's fine if you've covered it. Like, we don't need to go question by question. Once you're covering things, it's all right. That's the main point. Binjo, so I'm going to ask you, when joining a team, how do you set up your product for success? How do you, what's usually your go-to for the first 3 months, for the first 6 months? How do you set yourself up for success and the product for success? How do you integrate? How do you communicate with other teams? As someone who has worked in different product marketing and growth capacity across different industries in Africa and outside. Yeah.
I think that I keep getting the tougher questions.
What do you mean?
So I'm going to share. So I think the first thing I like to do when I join like a new company or a new team is I like to really understand like the product itself. So I use it like all to the end. Like I try to, I'm breaking stuff. Do you get like, if it's for sending money, I'm sending money to people. If it's a product that creates links, I'm creating all types of links. I'm trying to like just see what happens and use the product from somebody who doesn't know anything about the company and seeing like what the end goal is to make me keep using this product over and over and over again. And then I start to think about the business model, right? Because of certain like positions that I'm typically in, I often have to think about like, how does this thing make money? And I'm doing that because I want to see how I can really drive value and like also how fast, if it's a startup, I want to see how fast I can actually drive value. If it's, this is a volume business, how can I drive volume? If this is a business that requires large teams, right? How can I ensure that large teams use this software or this product? And so that's typically like the first two things that I do. And then the third thing is I start to meet like everybody in the company, in different teams, right? Depending on like how the company is structured, sometimes there's a sales team like you asked about. And I often have to talk to the sales team and see how they, what the experience is like in their conversations with customers, what customers tend to ask for, what questions they tend to ask, and just note all those things. But then engineering also, what are some of the requirements that we need from engineering, but we've never actually gotten? And why haven't we ever gotten those requirements or those resources? And how can we better work with them, right? In all of my experiences, I've typically had a running weekly call or a bi-weekly call with, you know, a sales lead or a sales team member or business or operations or engineering. And we just bounce off ideas off those calls all the time. That's how I typically get started. And then I, from all these conversations, right, I tend to bring out a unique value proposition, right? Like what's so different about this product that no other product has? That can be one thing. A second thing can also be, who are we communicating to that nobody else is communicating to, right? Maybe there's some audience somewhere, I don't know, maybe tailors in Bangladesh, right? This software is a CRM tool. It's like HubSpot, but it's for tailors in Bangladesh and like HubSpot isn't talking to them. How can we make sure that we're talking to them clearly and we're reaching them where they're at? But also I want to actually talk to 5-10 tailors and hear what their challenges are in their day-to-day tailoring business, right? So that I can really understand the customer point of view and start to think about myself as the customer. And then lastly, I start to deeply embed myself in the industry that I'm working in. So if it's a tailoring industry, I want to read all the blogs that all the tailors in the world or in Bangladesh are reading, right? I want to follow all the people who create videos about the tailoring business. I want to subscribe to all the newsletters and all the journalists and press and blogs. Like everything that's in that space, I want to be really deeply embedded in it. And then those four things really give me a really good grasp of like what to do next. So how do I start to craft user personas? Now that I've talked to 10 tailors, I can do that better. How do I start to understand how to communicate to them? Do I want to communicate to them in English or some local language or some dialect or slang? From talking to people, I actually get a really good grasp of what the audience segments need. But also like, how do I reach all these people, right? What channels make sense, right? Maybe there's an app that they use that I have never heard about before because I don't live in Bangladesh, right? I can figure that out and start to see how I can reach my audience segment there. And then obviously build go-to-market strategy around all these things. Build pillars for content, possibly build a budget if that's necessary, and also start to build like what resources I will need to succeed in terms of team, but also in terms of actual like software, tools, tech resources, and then, you know, we find our way to success from there. I feel like that was a really tough question. That was like a work interview question.
It wasn't. You covered it. Yeah, it does sound like it was an interview question. I didn't notice that. Yes. Sonia, so I'm going to come back to you and talk about best practices. What are some common growth techniques or product marketing techniques that people try out a lot, but from your experience, you know that like these are kind of red flags to do things like this based on your experience. And what are some uncommon techniques that people don't actually consider, but there are things that you know that, like, if you see this, you just know that this person knows what they're doing or stuff.
Okay, let me start with the ones that are red flags. And I have fallen into a number of this in my time. The first one is giveaways. If I see giveaways, I just know that you are not serious. It's a trap. It's a very big trap. It's not sustainable at all. It's attractive because it gets you like a lot of attention. It gets you a lot of like top of the funnel, like activity, engagement, but it does not translate. Ask anybody to activation. It does not. You might say, oh, as many people as sign up, they will sign up, but they will not do the thing that you need them to do, right? Because a lot of the times with giveaways, you're not even speaking to your target audience. You're trying to get as much top of the funnel activity as possible, but like you're not tailoring it to fit the people that, you know, should, that your product is designed for, people who find value in your product. I mean, this is tied to what I just said, but the second one is influencer marketing, right?
You're in the spirits.
Like, it's a Bermuda Triangle where a lot of brands like pour money in. And it's like, oh yeah, let's get the biggest names and the biggest faces to talk about our brand. Yeah, but like, we've seen cases where somebody is taking a video of herself. Oh no, someone is posting a tweet about a phone that she's supposed to be representing, like a techno phone, and yep. It's being tweeted with iPhone, right? That's your influencer right there. If a lot of influencers don't connect to the brand, and their followers can see it, right? Their followers can see that this person doesn't actually use this thing and they're getting paid for it, right? And it doesn't really affect me. If I'm supporting, again, very top of the funnel support, I'm supporting so that this person, the influencer, gets paid. It's not because I've seen value in this brand. Very rarely does that actually translate. And then a third one for me, this is going to be a little controversial, but a third one for me
drum roll.
Let's hear it.
It's paid ads. Now this is
the trio, of course, the holy trinity like of bad decisions.
Oh my god. So it's like paid ads, very, very attractive. You want action, you want activity, you want people to come, put money behind it, create ads on Facebook, right? You will get a lot of attention. However, there are certain times when you should not be running ads. In fact, there are certain times when marketing is not the most important thing for you as a brand. When you see like very early stage companies that have not really established who their ICP is, or their value proposition, like this business obviously doesn't really understand itself yet, or who exactly it's selling to, or the value it's selling to these people, right? They run ads, and like these ads, in fact, it's not just, you know, paid ads, it's like online ads, it's also like out of home ads, right? You see billboards and you see ads, and it's like, who are they talking to, right? What's happening here? It's not translating. Right. So it's very easy to draw up a budget and say, oh, we need to spend because it's marketing, we need to spend. But like, there are certain key insights you need to have as a business, as a brand, before you start spending. In fact, you need to validate who your audience is, what your messaging is organically before you put dollars or naira behind it. Yeah, that's my heel.
That's the heel you're going to die on. Binjo, yeah. You said ask me. So what's your contribution to this conversation? Because,
like, the three things Sonia said are the same three things I was going to say, but I have like real life examples. So I don't know if you guys know Uber Eats and Just Eat. They're like delivery businesses. Yeah. And the year is 2024.
Yeah.
And they're still doing like 40% off the next five orders. 40% off. It's like, yeah, guys, nobody's ordering this food. Like, I'm sorry.
Oh, they are just ordering for the meantime. They are gone.
Nobody's ordering food. So, like, if you have to keep doing this over and over and over again for like a 10-year period, you're still giving half off food. he's not going to make it. So for me, I think many people use like the right principle, but they're implementing it the wrong way, right? So the principle is you want to get awareness, you want to get people to talk about things, you want people to invite their friends, but like you need to be able to use it in the right way, at least get some value from it, right? And make sure that you're segmenting those strategies so closely. And so I want to use the word small in the very early stages so you can actually get really good value and like high retention rates as well, I think are super important. So that's referral. The second thing Sonia mentioned was influencers. I feel like people wrote so many articles about how influencer marketing, it can be a boost for your business. And so everybody just had to do it. Is like one of those things where it's like where they tell you like how marketing to Gen Z is the next thing that you need to succeed. It is not really like that, right? It depends on what you do, who you're serving, right? There's tons and tons and tons of people who are like influential in certain industries and sectors, but they don't have a social media page, right? And you need to go convince them to post on WhatsApp or to, you know, invite you to something, an event that they're hosting or whatever it is. Right, there's really that aspect. So the principle makes sense, but the execution is that, oh, I have to go and find somebody who has 500,000 Instagram followers. It's ridiculous. And then the third thing I was going to say on ads is the reason I see people keep doing ads, especially like in the African market, is because the ads are cheap. It's like less than $1 per click sometimes, depending on how you target your audience well. And so people are like, oh, this thing is not so expensive. But you start to see how the ad cost starts to pile up over time and doesn't deliver any value. And I'm going to use a very strong word here. Those three things are a lazy marketer's way of thinking about solving the marketing problem. And if those three things first come to your mind when you're doing like GTM assessments, I think you should put them at the bottom and try to figure out other things to rank above it. I think that one of the things we need to be able to do is be able to pull ourselves out of this zeitgeist of what everybody is doing now. And then everybody's in Twitter spaces now. So I'm going to do Twitter spaces. Even though my audience is not on Twitter, I'm going to talk about, I don't know what it is. I don't know, recycling on Twitter, like before real.
Yeah, but being your question about the trying out low-hanging easy wins, do you think that that's a function of maybe pressure from business leaders and all of them?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do you think it's a function of the marketing professionals not knowing enough or not being able to push back? And I'm going to drive it down to the question
the two of, both of them.
I'm going to now drive it to the question of, okay, now feels like I'm going to be coming with two questions, but I don't care, Danger. You kind of opened this hole. So it's a thing of how do business leaders need to set up their teams for success? And allowing them to experiment, or how to should business leaders go about like setting up their teams for success, marketing teams, if we think that why most marketing folks could be trying out these easy, quick wins is mostly because sometimes because either they're not allowed to push back, or sometimes but this is what everybody's doing, you just have to do it or something. What do you think? Like,
yeah.
Do you think that's the cause?
I think like you're absolutely right. It can be a bit of both. But I think most times, like one of the things I mentioned earlier is that a lot of people who are hiring marketing people don't actually care for the work that the marketing people need to do. And so they're not giving them the autonomy or the resources to make decisions. Also, they themselves haven't done enough customer research to be able to say, look, there are 10,000 people in this segment and they're in Idumota. So we know we need to go to Idumota. Do you get what I'm saying? They're in Computer Village, which is a completely different place. And so when the person who's doing the business themselves hasn't carried out enough research to figure out where the audience segment is, what the communities are in that segment, what websites cater to that audience, what blogs, what YouTube channels people in that audience tend to watch. Do you get what I'm saying? They've not done anything at all. What they've done is they've basically sat down on their laptop somewhere in their house or in their office and they've built software. And they don't understand, like they've zero research on the customer. And then the burden now becomes very heavy on marketing to now drive these results, which is why with some of these things happening, right? And so the appropriate thing to do as a business leader is to do your own research, right? Understanding the value prop is helpful when building products for somebody, because you're hoping that somebody uses this, but also being able to communicate that value prop to another person, whether it's marketing or any other person that you're hiring, is also super important. And then sometimes you have to actually be that guide and be like, look, here's the insight that I gleaned from actually being in markets, right? And here's how I think it can impact our business. I've worked with leaders before who we've had to, okay, I'll give an example. In my previous role last year, I worked for a company that was in the gaming space, right? Initially, they had built a generic developer tool, but because they were literally in the space and they were doing constant customer research, they found out that this tool was better used in the gaming space, right? And started to focus deeply on the gaming space. There was nobody else that was focusing on gaming as a niche for that developer tool. And that's something that you could only get when you're like talking to, when you're on the street talking to customers. Like you have to be on the street. You have to go out of your bubble of friends or family and talk to customers. So yeah, that's just like my own opinion. Now for marketing people, I do think there are benefits from being able to push back and showing a business case for why this thing isn't going to work. Especially if you have some experience on your hand and you have like the data and you've seen like tons of people have done this channel. It didn't really work. Did it not work because they didn't use it well? Maybe we need to use it better. Maybe there are ways we can modify our own campaign to drive better results and to make sure we get like really good our return on investment, right? But also maybe this channel is not even right. It's not the channel we want to do marketing with, so we can scrap it. But what are some other things we can do to drive value? And this requires a lot of creativity and deep thinking, really. If we are software tool for businesses, right? And it's customer support people that use it. What type of businesses do we need to onboard? What businesses have 100 customer service agents? What businesses have 20, have 10, have 5, right? We need to be able to think beyond, Googling, marketing budget templates or marketing campaign templates. Because like that's not going to solve your problem. So you need to be able to really think deeply about the space that you're in. And maybe partnerships is what you actually need to do. And then do partnerships marketing to be able to push the needle further beyond your, initial set of partners, right? I think another thing is also understanding the business that you're in. A business can be marketing led or sales led or even a bit of both. But you need to be able to understand like where your responsibility lies. Your responsibility can be to support the sales team in building brand. So when they go out there, they can convince customers faster. Your responsibility can also be the one to build the entire funnel from lead gen all the way to retention, right? And that just really requires you to understand that business. That's why I mentioned earlier about how like when I joined a company, I tried to like talk to everybody, understand what's happening here. How do we make money? So I can drive like proper value. Because given a bit of experience in my previous role as well, somebody came and wanted us to do a TikTok campaign. And I'm like, yeah, devs are on TikTok, but they're often not looking for software to use on TikTok, right? So if we're going to do this thing, we need to do it really, really well. But I would say let's not even do it at all. You get what I'm saying? And let's focus on other things that can drive value in the short term and maybe bring it back in the long term. So really, it's just, it's one of those things you have to deal with on the job.
I feel like there would always be those businesses that either don't have the patience for marketers or growth people and they just want instant results. As someone who has worked in the space for a while, how do you think people should navigate working on impactful projects? And how do you think people should choose projects that, or in your experience, how do you choose projects that are worth actually working on, deciding to leave a place to another place? What should people consider before moving, especially for senior folks? Because I feel like growth roles are more senior folks than entry level.
I think the first thing for me is always like curiosity. For a bunch of the companies I've worked at, they've been the first, second or third doing that kind of thing in their space, in the continent or even maybe globally. And so for me, it's a curiosity thing. It's like, oh, I'm curious about what they're doing here, right? And then I will then start to think about the business. A second thing I like to think about is this is just my own thing, the technical quality of the products. So if I use the product and like it crashed, the app crashed the first time I used it, or I put my cursor on a text field and it brought up the numbers keypad on my phone, I already know that I can't solve any problem here. The engineering is going to be poor and it's going to be an uphill battle to solve some of these challenges. So I tend to also think about that technical quality of the product. And then the third thing is, can this thing actually make money? Because like all of our jobs are evolving around the sustainability of the business. And I don't want to work somewhere where like I join now and in 3 months time, I'm fighting for my life because the business cannot make money. And I think that if the only way to answer this question is to deeply study tech businesses and tech business models, the models that have existed for like the last 20, 30 years, and they've not made any money. People come, try, spend a bunch of money, and the business dies, like over and over again. There's tons of models, like in Africa, for example, like large e-commerce platforms. I don't know when it's ever going to make sense, but it never has. Do you get what I'm saying? And so being able to look back, right, and do your own research and say, who's done this? Why did it fail? Did it fail because like marketing was bad? Did it fail because products was bad? Or did it fail because like we're a continent that hasn't really prospered in the last 20 years? Like, let's be honest. So people don't have money. Do you get what I'm saying? And like, there's nothing I'm going to do in specific types of roles to make sure that people have more money so they can spend. Do you get what I'm saying? But there are other businesses I could join where I can make a direct impact on people's revenue and livelihood. And so being able to think, you know, fundamentally really helps. Another thing I like to think about is whether or not the team has the resources to actually put to marketing. So I don't mind joining teams early or joining a small team that is not like really funded. But I want to be able to see if there's a possibility that, you know, in 3 months' time, in 1 year time, especially in tech, people often raise, you know, capital. Is that like, can this person raise the capital that is necessary to actually push this product as far as it needs to go? Because I like to think long term. And then, you know, that's just like, those are like four things that guide me really. And then five is, you know, are they going to pay me enough that makes sense? Because I have to pay for lights and rent. That's the final thing. And that's just like obviously a personal decision depending on where you're at in your career.
Yeah. So Binjo has said like a number of things, because I mean there are not a lot of things you look at when it's time to choose like a new place to switch to. But another thing I'd add is like the people you want to work with, do they have sense, right? This is very important because Binjo mentioned something like this earlier where like they don't even really understand what the work you're about to do entails, right? So there would be a lot of unrealistic expectations. So for senior folk, it's easy to push back. It's easy to say, you know, this doesn't make sense, right? This is why it hasn't worked. But over time, that can actually just wear you down, because you'd be fighting for your life because, you know, certain fundamentals in the product are not clear yet. Or like, you know, you haven't proven, PMF itself is far. You just haven't even proven that maybe three people would want to buy this thing, right? And yet you're expected to bring these outrageous results. It would not make any sense. So you need to work with a team that knows that just hiring like a marketing person or a growth person is not a silver bullet. It's not a magic trick, right? There are certain principles that need to be followed. There are certain rules that like are true. There are certain laws that exist. Like you need to prove that this is viable in this market, right? Before you even hire a growth person, because that's what the growth person would work with. So they don't have any undue expectations. You yourself, you've seen what it's like being in the market, right? Now my job is to scale this little effort you've done. You've planted a seed. We've seen that the seed can germinate, right? Now my job is to water that seed. Fertilize that seed, prune all of those things to make sure that it grows into like a really good flourishing tree, right? So working with people who get it, highly, highly important. Yeah, that's what I would add to what Binjo said.
I also want to add that I think most of your listeners are going to be probably people who work in tech or want to work in tech. Another final thing I like to ask myself is like, does this need to be a tech business? Because it might be a really great, fantastic business idea that maybe in another world, I wouldn't mind like doing marketing for. But I particularly, you know, I'm a professional that wants to sell software. Like I want to sell software that people will use, right? If it's a business that doesn't necessarily need to be a tech business or is not going to be a tech business in the next 5 years for whatever reason, maybe just because there's not much adoption of software in the space, it's like, so maybe I don't want to be there. Somebody else can do that work. It's a great idea. It's a great business. But like for me personally, also something I deeply think about a lot, like, is this software actually going to be useful for somebody, you know, in their daily work or in their daily life? So that's one final thing I would add to that. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to follow up on that and ask, what do you think differentiates a great growth marketer or product marketer from just anyone else, what do you think are the top three skills that you need to like actually, or mindset that you need to have to actually be a great product marketing person or growth?
Did you ask me or Sonia?
Yes,
me. Okay. I think the first thing is really like understanding like marketing principles. I think being able to delight audiences, attract audiences to an idea, to a product, to a concept, being able to create for them. And it can be content, it can be ads, it can be anything. But having that ability to, you know, get people interested in the product is something that I think is fundamental. So number one, fundamental skill. And this cuts across multiple marketing channels. You have to know how to do this across multiple marketing channels. I think the second thing that is really important is having a good eye for opportunities to reach your customers. I think many people miss several opportunities to meet your customers. And you can only do this when principles are covered, but you're deeply thinking about like, the word I like to use is I like to say that like marketing is basically distribution, right? In software or even in any other product, you're distributing these products to the markets, right? So that's why it's marketing. You're distributing products to the markets, right? And so being able to think about like how to distribute products and creative ways can really help you solve problems. And then the third thing is not being afraid to be technical. I think many people run away from like technical things that need to be done. And that often is what separates, you know, really good people from people that are not so good, because good people just do the technical thing. They watch the YouTube video if necessary. They take a course if necessary. And then how many things am I supposed to say?
As much as
I don't know, because I feel like I stopped counting. And then a final thing is like having a really good grasp of data, right? Being able to quickly spot that we're doing a marketing campaign, we've spent money on it for 3 months, it's not bringing money, let's stop it. Yeah, let's redo that budget and move it elsewhere, right? And you can only do this if you actually have the chops to set up the data thing, or a team has set up and you can actually see the numbers. And it can be simple things like Google Analytics, right? And it can be more complex things like segments or amplitude or metabase or some other thing. But being able to look at the numbers, right, and say, look, every time we publish this type of blog post, we get a massive hit in traffic, right? And I'll give one simple example. When I was at Future Africa, we had a fairly simple analytics setup. It was Google Analytics, nothing out of the blue or mind-blowing. But we did find that every time we would publish a blog post that we had funded, that we were funding a company or we had funded a company, we would literally get a bunch of people coming to the funnel that day. And so in my head, I knew that we had to make more announcements, right? And I had a constraint. One major constraint was that I can't make an announcement before the founders have made an announcement. So that means I need to line up announcements like months in advance, right? Ensuring that every time the founder make an announcement, I have something to quickly back it up. And so for me, I'm talking to our operations team, I'm talking to founders, I'm talking to working with our content team. How can we make sure that we, every week or every other week, we have this type of content pushed out? Now we have opinion pieces as well. They are nice, they are fantastic. But what really drives the needle for us as a business and what makes us money is when we make a funding announcement. Do you get what I'm saying? And so I want to keep doing more of that. And so that's just like being able to think, looking at data and being able to see that like there was literally a spike every single time we did that action, and being able to now build that as a content engine and build that as a growth engine for the business going forward. So that's just like something to think about. One more thing to think about. Yeah.
I like how Ben just spoke about data and the creativity on the content side. So Sonia, I'm going to come to you and ask you this question as a growth person. How do you balance out being data driven and also giving room for the creative expression in your with products that you work with and with your templates as a growth person?
Okay, so I wouldn't say you need to balance, right? Because they're not like two different things. They're not two opposite things. They don't negate each other. They're two sides of a coin, right? As a growth person, you're always experimenting. You're always trying out new things, right? Because even when you have like a piece of content that works, this content works. I mean, at Nestcoin, we had several, there was a period we had like several ads, we're running ads one period, right? We constantly had to refresh those ads because yes, it works. Yes, it's, you know, giving us good results, we're getting conversions, we're getting active users, right? However, those ads, after a while, the results kind of plateaus, right? So you need to refresh it. And refreshing your content, refreshing your efforts requires creativity. Marketing is, like Binjo said, delighting your audience. It's making them, it's attracting them, right? It's like, marketing is like you're in a market, obviously. You need to decorate your space so that people will come in, right? You need to make it so that as people are passing by or you're going out to meet people, you're doing the things that bring them back into your own space and get them to do the things that you need them to do. So you need to be as creative as possible because, I mean, we've spoken about people just following everybody else. Like, everybody's doing Twitter spaces. Let's do Twitter spaces. Everybody is, you know, a brand says one catchy phrase. Let's all say the same catchy phrase, right? You need to stand out from, like, everybody, right? But in that same vein, you also need to do only the things that work. So try out new things, be creative, but, you know, put in, invest just a little, enough to get some data, right? So you have, like, a new creative, don't put all your budget behind it. Try it out with, say, I don't know, if you're doing ads, try it out with, I know I talked about ads before, but there are cases where ads are fine. If you're doing ads, try it out with, like, a very small budget, right? That small budget will give you some numbers, and based on those numbers, you're able to tell how well this is performing, right? You're doing content, you put out, like, blog posts, right? You don't go so deep into, like, a particular content silo till you can attest that this is a content category that is beneficial to my audience. And how do you know that? You're measuring visits, you're measuring click-throughs, you're measuring how many people click-through went on to do an establishment action on my app, right? How many people click through actually even paid for this product, right? So you need to measure everything at each step to understand how well your creativity is driving your marketing. So I don't see it as you needing to balance. I see it as they work hand in hand. So you need to be as creative as possible, but you also need to be nimble enough and backed by data to, you know, keep moving, right? As your creativity is fueling your marketing, your data needs to be informing how you scale those creatives or those assets. So yeah, that's what I see.
Absolutely. Thank you for correcting me. I think that's a better way to think about it. Binjo, so now we're going to go to what are your current favorite product marketing tools to use? And also, in terms of emerging technologies, which ones are you most excited about that you think would be impactful for your work as a growth or product marketing person?
That's very interesting. Can I say tools I don't like?
Sure, go for it.
Google Analytics, they ruined it. Google Analytics sucks now. I don't know why, but they just ruined that product for everybody. I have no idea what to do. I have no idea who to talk to fix it. Please, somebody on the Google team, please, just roll it back. The old one was much better, but that's one product that I haven't enjoyed using recently. Are there any new products that I've, like, recently enjoyed using?
Emerging technology, before applying AIs to things and marketing, new tools emerging. What are you excited for? What aspect of your product marketing?
Like, I've been using Grammarly for years, so I'm not particularly excited about, like, I don't know, text editors or text predictors for now. So I think that's, like, why I'm like, maybe I'm like bad vibes for that sector. It's like, yeah, but I've been doing these things. It's like university. You people are stressing me out. But, like, I do think that there's a lot of value in some of the AI tools, specifically the writing tools. Grammarly and Hemingway are so good at helping you figure out a better way to communicate things for your audience. And the really nice thing I like about, like, Hemingway, on one hand, is I can tell Hemingway that, look, I'm writing this thing for people who have, like, PhD level education, and then it can nudge me and guide me into creating better for them. And at the same time I can tell Hemingway I'm writing things for people at, like, grade level or high school level, and it can also help me do that. So that I think is really, really great. I do think, though, that I'm trying to see what tool did I use recently that was really nice. There was an SEO tool I used recently and I really liked it because it was just, like, really straight to the point. It's called Mangoes. Yes, Mangoes. And had some really nice free tools as well. Hopefully people pay for it so that they can stay alive for us. But I really liked using Mangoes. What other tool have I really liked using? There's a really interesting CMS called Contentful. I have used it at my last three jobs now. And it's so powerful in how, like, you can create, like, content modules and reuse them across multiple pieces of content. And I think what I really like about it is that you can work with devs easily. It has a very easy framework for devs to help you build stuff. So if I have a problem, I need to build something, maybe like a video box or a call to action button, someone can quickly build that and I can reuse it in more in like hundreds of blog posts and edit the call to action and maybe change the links as well. I think I find that very helpful. The downside of it is that they don't really have very good support, but like it's a really great tool. That's something I use that I really, really like. What other tools are emerging? I can't think of any right now. I feel like tools for marketing have been like the same for such a long time. I can't think of any new thing that like I haven't like heard of that I've tried and it's very exciting, really. Most things have been the same for a really, really long time. Maybe we do need some new tools in the space. I'll pass the mic to Sonia to see if she has
Sonia, any what's your contribution?
Okay, so in terms of, first of all, with Google Analytics, I do agree. Although a fave still remains Google Tag Manager. I enjoy that tool a lot. I don't know why. It's just very simple to use. Yeah. So it's simplicity. I like it. And I pray it remains that way.
Do you know they used to have a really good landing page optimizer measurement tool and they shut it down as well?
Sad. Oh, Google.
Sad.
Google. Then a tool that I don't enjoy as much anymore or even use as much is Bitly. I don't know what happened to Bitly, but they are no longer like the Bitly I used to know.
I think they gated the thing and it just became not nice.
But I like the new Grammarly thing. I like how Grammarly is now using AI, right? Grammarly has always been Grammarly and Grammarly is great, but they have this new AI tool that not only just suggests how it should sound, it kind of rewrites it. I don't always accept the suggestion, right? But I like the way it works and how it fits into like my Google Docs flow, all of that. It's not obtrusive unlike the other one. I don't know how they did that. And then a tool that I really, really like using now that I've used like quite often is 11 Labs. It's like a voiceover tool. So it's like AI generated voice, right? Now, the reason I like this tool a lot is it can clone voices. So it's very helpful with like if you have video content that you're doing and you need to do like a voiceover really quickly, it saves you money. And it means that like till they fix the copyright laws, there are a few things that marketing people can get away with using that tool. Those are the tools that I enjoy using this game.
Yeah. So question I'm going to ask Sonia now. Case study related, what has been like an experiment or what has been like one of your biggest fails in your like part as a growth person, something that you were sure would actually work and it kind of came out like, okay. And what was the takeaway from that you've used to apply in your order going forward? Yeah.
I'll start from the takeaway. And the takeaway is that giveaways don't work.
This wasn't exactly
a giveaway. It was a referral campaign, right? Now, it was a very no-code, let's just use sticks and stones to set this thing up, right? It's just all marketing-led, no engineering efforts involved, right? So this is not tied to the product. This is like community referrals, right? Now, it's like we want people to join the community and we want other people to invite other people to join the community. We want to use referrals to grow the community, which is fine, right? However, because it was not a revenue-generating action, it wasn't tied to revenue in any way. It was simply like a community growth action. Very quickly, it became clear that we were spending money that we weren't getting back, right? And now you can say, okay, well, maybe it's important for brand building and for just getting the community. But very quickly, it became clear that people were, first of all, gaming the system, right? That was annoying. Also a given, but people were gaming the system like mad. And then also, people were not as engaged as we'd like, right? People were not, because the engagement metric was now like, it was our not staff for that particular initiative. Engagement wasn't as high as our, like our goal or our objective. So it became clear that like, this is not a success. It got a lot of, like we got a lot of people in, we got a lot of, I think, referrals were like our biggest growth channel, right? However, it wasn't really doing the thing we needed to do, which is bringing engaged people who will stay engaged till we launch the product, right? And then, you know, give us money or make us money, right? So yeah, that's for me. It was not, I think the people I worked with don't consider it a failure, but I do because it did not do the thing that we needed it to do.
It's learning. So what did they used to call that thing? I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vinjosh, so I feel like you've shared enough experiences today. I'm not going to ask you that before you say I'm coming at you again with plenty of questions. So I'm just going to wrap up by asking, if you were to start again, your career as a growth product marketing person, would you do things differently? If so, what would you do differently? And this is kind of for folks who are looking to get into the industry, how they should think about like the roadmap, the career path and all of that. And when you're done, Sonia can just answer and we can wrap up.
Yeah, one thing I would have done differently is I did get some really interesting offers in my final year of university, but I wasn't interested in the space that I was getting. Two offers from two companies. And I should have at least just like leaned into my career. That's one time when I said no to my curiosity. I should have leaned into my curiosity and seen what those offers would have brought for me, because those two companies got acquired. And I know some very rich people in those two companies today. But I could have at least, I think that would have been a very good opportunity for me. So that's one lesson, lean into my curiosity more. Second thing I would have done is I would have started trying to build a global career earlier than I did. I think there's definitely a lot of benefits there. It's obviously more competitive, but I think that you can really cut your teeth at doing some amazing stuff at scale. I think that the market that I played in for a while was too small for too long, and I became too comfortable in that market, and I could have been more uncomfortable and obviously gained a lot of experience in doing more global work earlier, just because there's like, you know, like there's like 200 startups trying to kill your startup. So you have to find ways to succeed. So there's that, those two things. Was there a third question? Was there a second question?
No, just how you tell people to navigate the industry career path, what skills they should need, like to kind of get into like growth or product.
I think that you really have to be a good writer in this space. I think like there's like nothing, and you don't have to be like, I don't know, some Nobel laureate type of writing. It's like obviously business writing. But I think you have to be able to communicate your ideas and companies' ideas in text. Because I do find that still remains the primary channel, especially on the internet, even with like podcasts and videos. And like text is still the primary channel for most people. And it's a really good channel to start to hone your skills. And so writing becomes really important. So being a better writer, I think, fundamentally helps. What's the second thing I will say? Being technical and not being afraid of like technicalities, like HTML seems daunting, but like it seems daunting to everyone when they start out. But like I could probably write HTML in my sleep now. But it gets easier, right? And so not being afraid to tackle technical issues. Third thing I would say is following up from there is talking to engineering teams. I think there's lots of things that like devs can share, and we can also even share with them. But we often don't get to talk to them, and that can be really valuable for us. If you're thinking about working in, you know, software space, there's lots of valuable things you can learn from just like how developers tend to think about their work within the company, and you can communicate with them better. Also helps you as you know, go further up into leadership positions, because you then talk to them more often. So I think those three things are super important. And maybe to add to what Sonia mentioned as well, reading, but if reading isn't your thing, also watching YouTube videos, listening to podcasts, I think those are things that have really helped me. And I like to just generally like see how people are growing tech companies. Like I just see an app, I just download it, I want to see what's there. Like I don't really care for the thing, but I want to sign up. I want to see, like, do they send an email after I sign up? Do they send a notification or someone call me on the phone? Like how are other people around the world growing companies, right? I read their blog, I subscribe to their newsletter. I just want to see what like is happening out there. And so that curiosity means I'm constantly getting like new ideas all the time. And I can even sometimes modify them at work, right? So, you know, that's a really good roadmap. Maybe Sonia can share the rest of the question.
So I wish I was technical like in uni. So I mean, I've always been led by my curiosity, and it means that like there's really nothing in my head, there's nothing I can't do. So HTML, CSS, as long as like the task requires it, I will go, I'll watch a YouTube video, I'll read all the material, I'll do like all the entry level stuff to learn, and I'll do the work that needs to be done. However, I wish that like very, very early on, I'd done like a lot of technical stuff, right? And understood like the principles of it so that I can have like real conversations with the devs, right? With, you know, technical team. I can still do that, but it could be richer, right? Now, what I'd advise like people growing in their career, right? So it's like one major thing. And that thing is your manager is going to be the most important person at wherever you work, right?
Yeah.
Whoever your manager is, you need to pay attention to that, right? Before you join a company, understand where exactly we're managing you, right? Because a lot of early stage people get given like unrealistic expectations that if they had someone just above them, that person would be like, yeah, this is not the work that this person is supposed to be doing. But because management doesn't understand and there's no person in between you and management, you're getting a lot of like heat for stuff that isn't at your pay grade. Like it's not your pay grade. So like, and you, so a lot of people, sure, they get thrown into the arena, they fight and they get those muscles, but a lot of people burn up. Right, a lot of people get burnt out very quickly, right, and then say things like, okay, maybe this isn't right, the right path for me, but simply because like you're not in the right place or you don't have the right person managing you, right? So if you're quite early stage, you should ideally go for places where there's at least a growth person between you and C-level, or the person in charge of like your CEO or CEO or whoever has like growth chops. Right, so they get the level you are supposed to be playing at so that your expectations are realistic. The other thing I would say for people like starting out in their career is like experiment a lot. Try out things, right? Try out a lot of things. I learn by doing, right? I obviously consume content, but I learn a lot more by actually doing the things. Like I mentioned CSS, HTML. If I did not have like work requirements for that, I probably wouldn't have the motivation to learn. But thanks to like needing to do the thing, I did the thing. So there are certain tasks you don't have to delegate to like product team or the engineering team, right? You can just whip it up yourself. You can watch a few videos, try it out. There are no code tools that can help you. You don't have to be all the way technical. You can figure shit out. Like, let that figure stuff out. Let that be, like, your first port of call. Try and figure it out by yourself. If you can't, then ask for help. It will help your growth. It will help you, like, stretch really quickly or faster. So, yeah, those two things.
Yes, I was going to add that I think something that really helped me early on in my career was just willingness to help people. Like if someone was working on something, I would like share ideas with them. Maybe I would do a small document that they could run with and do their own stuff if they couldn't hire like a marketing professional. I think it really helped me. Another thing that also really helped me is building my own projects. So when I wanted to get better at like SEO, for example, I got a book and I actually built a website to drive SEO. At the time, I wasn't working anywhere that I needed SEO, but I saw that there was a gap, right? And I had to just do that to learn. And when I like had learned the thing, and the website was getting a couple million visitors, I was like, okay, I think I'm okay with this skill now. I didn't really need the website in the first place. So then eventually shut it down. But I think that experimentation and not being afraid to actually just build that thing, the internet is still largely like permissionless and you can build things and you can see how they work. If you want to learn content marketing, you can start like a blog, for example, and start writing and try to grow the blog. Right, whether the blog has its own social media accounts or whatever, and see what that experience is like, as opposed to always like, you know, waiting for permission, right? Because sometimes there's just no opportunity that's coming your way, but you want to get better at this skill so you can keep pushing things, you know, for yourself at the very least, and then that can become part of your, you know, your portfolio when you start to interview for work. So that's just the final thing I wanted to add.
So you ended with a bang. Thank you so much for sharing. It's been great. Thank you for taking the time. It's very delightful to speak to. Like, I feel like this was just casual and I was like, oh, okay, before the call, well, it's fine. And thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you found this helpful, feel free to share it with someone else you think might find it helpful. Also, we'd love if you could leave us a rating on our channel. And don't forget to subscribe to stay updated for our next episode.